This combination of policies, large-scale CCS at power plants and major industrial facilities, plus a large-scale shift to hybrids, or still better, plug-in hybrids, can provide a solid, low-cost foundation for avoiding the doubling of the carbon dioxide concentration up to the year 2050. Yet it will not be enough, and many other low-cost options abound. We also should slow or stop tropical deforestation, promote aggressive development of alternative non-carbon energy sources, especially solar power, and support the shift from point source emissions, such as furnaces in homes and boilers in factories, to reliance on electricity produced by low-emission power plants. Moving from this very specific scenario to a quick back-of-the-envelope calculation of costs confirms that the overall global cost of achieving emissions control is likely to be much less than 1% of annual world income as of mid-century. Let us suppose that by 2050, the world economy grows 6 times, from roughly $60 trillion in 2005 to $420 trillion in 2050. Suppose that improved energy efficiency keeps the overall growth of global energy use at 3 times today's rate, compared with the 6-fold increase of the world economy. With today's technologies and energy mix, annual carbon dioxide emissions from fossil fuel use would also rise 3 times, from 21 billion tons to 63 billion tons. Now suppose that the new mix of technologies allows the world to avoid at least 2/3 of these emissions at a cost of $30 per ton, a reasonable scenario. That would mean avoiding 58 billion tons per year of emissions at a total cost of $1.74 trillion. Equals 58 billion times $30 per year. Suppose also that we can avoid the current annual rate of deforestation, that is, 7 billion tons of CO2, at a price of $10 per ton of avoided emissions, or $70 billion per year. These assumptions suggest, at a cost of roughly $1.8 trillion per year, that the world could keep its total emissions in 2050 at roughly 29 billion tons. That is a large cost in absolute terms, but compared with a $300 trillion per year global economy in 2050, it is a mere 0.4% of annual world income. A level of emissions of 29 billion tons by mid-century, compared with 36 billion tons in 2007, would be compatible with a long-term avoidance of a doubling of CO2, as long as emissions continue to decline after 2050 through further progress in technology. Creating market incentives. The climate risks of business, as usual, are dire. The costs of mitigation, limiting carbon emissions, are manageable. Yet even the lowest cost steps are unlikely to be taken on their own. Each individual emitter, whether a power plant, industrial facility, homeowner, or car driver, has no incentive to spend the extra sums required to sequester carbon or adopt low-carbon technologies if the new technologies are costlier than high-carbon technologies. Similarly, scientists and engineers have little incentive to undertake the science and engineering of low-carbon energy systems under conditions in which the atmosphere is treated like a global commons and emissions of carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases are made without market penalty. We have noted the core areas where public policy is needed to augment market forces. The first is in basic climate science. We must continue, and indeed greatly increase, the public financing of scientific efforts such as the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, which assesses the published scientific research on climate issues for the global public and policy community. Similarly, there is an urgent need to increase funding for climate science in the poorest countries to help those countries understand how to adapt to climate changes already underway and to changes that are likely to occur in the years ahead. Science is also needed to enable those countries to participate effectively in global mitigation efforts, for example, by reducing the rate of deforestation and by adopting low-carbon energy strategies in the course of economic development. The second area where public policy is needed is in the development of new scalable alternatives to carbon emissions. The most urgent is a global effort to prove, and if successful, to disseminate CCS technologies. If CCS works, then we can combine continued large-scale fossil fuel use with reduced emissions. Other large-scale scientific and engineering efforts are also needed regarding solar, nuclear, biofuel, geothermal, wind, and other alternative energy sources. Yet these efforts will lead nowhere in terms of widespread adoption unless incentives are also put in place. There must be a cost, in one form or another, of choosing a high-carbon technology over a low-carbon technology. We have noted the many ways that such a cost can be imposed. Most directly, the world or individual nations might agree to industry standards, for example, that every power plant built after a target date must emit no more than a specified level of CO2 per kilowatt-hour of electricity produced. The plant would be free to select a non-fossil fuel energy supply, for example, hydro, wind, solar, or nuclear, or to use a CCS approach. Mileage standards could be imposed on automobiles in the same manner. An alternative would be to tax carbon dioxide emissions and to subsidize any CCS activities. Such a tax could be easily collected by taxing the underlying carbon-based fuel and then offering a subsidy per ton of CO2 that is sequestered. A certification process would be needed to verify the sequestration. Yet another mechanism, as we've discussed, would be a tradable permit system. This, too, would impose a cost per unit of CO2 emission equal to the price of a permit for that amount of emission. The main problem with such a system is that it is very cumbersome, requires extensive monitoring and auditing, and also requires a system for allocations of the valuable permits, possibly leading to favoritism and even corruption. I believe that after a considerable debate on these alternatives, the world will ultimately agree to phase in a set of industrial standards for power, automobiles, cement, steel, and other key sectors, augmented by a gradually rising tax on carbon emissions, a subsidy for sequestration, and perhaps some limited use of a tradable permit system. It is worth knowing that revenues from a carbon tax or from auctioning carbon permits would be used to finance public goods or perhaps to offset other distortionary taxes.